Welcome, listeners. Tonight, I have for you a tale best listened in stillness. Perhaps with the lights low, perhaps near an old clock. But only if you're sure it's not ticking just for you. Welcome back, or welcome to, Stories, Fables, Ghostly Tales, and I'm your host, The Tale Teller. This is a story of grief and waiting, of a man who wanted just one more moment, and what answered when he called through time to get it. It's about love that refused to die, and the thing that heard it whisper. There's a workshop by the sea where no clocks work anymore, and a road that doesn't end, not because it's infinite, but because it loops. There's a creature who's always watching, and the terrifying truth that sometimes the monster isn't what waits in the dark, but what refuses to let the dark fall. Now, I'm not saying this tale will make your mirrors lie. I'm not saying it'll make your old pocket watch feel heavier. But I am saying this. If you've ever whispered, "What if I could go back?" then this story has already begun. So, wind the key, dim the world, and let's listen close. Because the first tick sounds like this. In the coastal town of Grey Wharf, with the fog never lifted, and salt chewed at every wall, there lived a man no one visited. In the coastal town of Grey Wharf, with the fog never lifted, and salt chewed at every wall, there lived a man no one visited. Elias Vero, the last of his name, the last of his trade. He was not feared, only forgotten, like a page torn from a book and tucked behind a drawer. His workshop leaned at the edge of the harbour, its wood swollen with years of storms, its shingles warped like curled fingers. Every surface inside was crowded with clocks, some regal and tall, others squat and cracked, many without hands at all. Each had a voice, once. Now, they whispered. The room was always dim, even by day. Curtains stained with smoke and mildew filtered the little light that fought its way through the salt-crusted windows. And Elias, thin as wire and bent as a question mark, moved like a ghost through it all, winding, dusting, whispering things no one heard. He had not spoken aloud in how long now? Since Mara, since the flood, since the river pulled her from his arms like a stubborn thread unraveling a life. Now the only voice he heard was the tick, the soft, breathless tick, until even that began to die. Clocks began to stop, one by one, without reason, without repair. Their stillness made the silence deeper, wrong, somehow. A silence that waited rather than rested. The sort of silence that pressed against the back of your neck like someone standing too close. One evening, as the storm shook the bones of the town, Elias noticed a low hum beneath the silence. Not sound exactly, more like pressure, like a drumbeat pressed into his ribs. He lit the old oil lamp. Its flame danced weakly. He turned towards the great workbench, cluttered with fragments of time, tiny gears like teeth, springs curled like dead spiders, and beneath it, a drawer he hadn't opened in decades. His father's drawer. He had never dared to touch it. As a child, he remembered his father screaming when Elias reached toward it, red-faced and trembling.
"That drawer stays shut!"
But his father was long dead now, wasn't he? And the storm outside wasn't just wind. It was calling. The drawer stuck. The wood had swollen tight around it. But Elias pulled, with old strength that surprised him. It came loose with a sound like something exhaling. Inside, wrapped in moth-bitten velvet, lay a black pocket watch. It was unlike any timepiece he'd seen. Not brass, not silver.
but a black so deep it seemed to swallow light. Cold, yet somehow pulsing faintly, like the back of a cat's throat. On the back, scratched with a hand that shook.
It does not forget. Do not wake it.
Elias stared at it for a long time. The other clocks were dead silent now. The room felt like it had sunk beneath the sea. He reached for it. The moment his skin touched the casing, every single clock stopped. The oil lamp went out. And from the farthest shadow of the workshop, behind the wall, behind the weight of years, came a sound like a pendulum swinging. One enormous pendulum, swinging once, and then nothing. Only the black watch ticking now, slowly. Not forward, not backward, just in place. Elias would not sleep again. Not tonight. Not for many nights. Time had remembered him, and it had questions. The watch did not tick with sound. It ticked with presence. Elias placed it on the bench and stepped back, heart climbing like a spider through his throat. Outside, the storm screamed against the panes. Rain clawed the windows like desperate fingernails, but the workshop was silent as the grave. For hours, or perhaps minutes, time had grown dishonest. He simply watched it. The black watch. Small. Heavy. Breathing. He did not sleep. When he finally staggered into his cot in the corner, he found the sheets were damp. Not with rain. With sweat. With cold. With memory. In his dreams, she came. Not as a woman she'd been. Not vibrant, warm Mara, but as the moment he had tried and failed to forget. She stood in the flood, eyes wide, hair soaked, her lips moved, but the water stole the sound. He reached for her, screamed for her.
Mara!
And then he woke, choking on her name, knotted in the sheets like a man tangled in vines. The room was dim with early morning rot, and the watch sat in his hand. He didn't remember picking it up. Worse, it was open, its face ticking, winding itself. From that day on, time grew uncertain, not in ways most would notice. The clocks on the wall still ticked in unison, but Elias would set a tool down, blink and find it moved, sometimes repaired, sometimes missing altogether. He would pass a mirror and not recognize his own eyes. He would rise from breakfast and realize it was dusk. Once he passed a window and saw snow. A moment later, rain again. Reality frayed, not like rope, but like old cloth left too long in the wind. And always the watch, on the table, in his pocket, on the windowsill. He stopped remembering putting it there, but it was always near. The first time he heard Mara's voice again, he was hunched beneath the workbench, retrieving a fallen coil. The storm had come again, not a real one, not outside. A storm in the clocks. They shuddered and groaned and spat dust from their mouths and from somewhere behind him. Soft, ruined, she said,
"Allies."
He froze, turned. No one. Only the scent of her perfume, faint, wilted, lavender and rainwater. He wept then, not loudly, not from fear, from the kind of grief that had grown teeth. That night, the dream changed. He wasn't at the flood. He was back in the room, their bedroom, before the river took her, and she was there, pale, sleeping still. He sat at her side, took her hand. She was cold, but she was there. He leaned close to her ear and whispered, "I miss you." And for the first time since death had stolen her breath, she opened her eyes, and she looked afraid. Not of him, but of something behind him. He turned and woke up screaming. The mirror by the hearth was shattered, but his reflection had not moved. When he turned to the workbench that morning, the watch was open again. Only this time he saw something in the glass face. Not a reflection, a scene. It showed the bedroom, the one from the dream, and Mara sitting up in bed, pale and alive, and turning slowly toward the mirror, toward him. Elias reached toward it, and the watch snapped shut. The clocks in the room stopped again, but one began ticking in its place from inside the wall. And Elias, breathing hard, whispered his first words in weeks. Mara. The name didn't sound like his anymore. The hands of the watch twitched, and somewhere deep in the darkness behind time, something answered. The next morning, Elias woke with the watch clutched to his chest. He hadn't placed it there. His fingers were bruised, black grease beneath the nails, the scent of iron lingering on his palms. He checked the workshop floor. He had been working in the night. There were new gear arrangements, twisted escapements, clocks half dismantled and reassembled in impossible ways. None of them would tick. He reached for the pocket watch and found it had no dial anymore. Instead, inside the open face, there was a moving image, dim and colourless, as if lit by moonlight underwater. It showed himself, asleep at the workbench. But behind him stood a second figure. Not quite human, slender, head bowed, arms too long, draped in tattered cloth that moved without wind. It didn't seem to touch the floor. It simply existed, as though it had always been there. He spun the crown of the watch, and time shuddered. The workshop blinked. He was now 10 minutes before. A coil of brass jumped back into its box. A screwdriver rolled in reverse and rested in its holder. His heartbeat stumbled in his throat. It had worked. Time had reversed. But something else came with it. In the corner, where the oldest grandfather clock stood, there was now a crack in the wall. A vertical wound, dark and breathing slow. A low ticking issued from it, tick, 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 deep, like the footfalls of something crawling downward through the centuries. Elias rewound the watch again. He moved back an hour. The crack widened. On his third turn, he found himself standing outside the workshop entirely, on a winter night, decades gone, snow falling like ash. The windows were intact. Inside, he saw his father at the bench, working. He hadn't seen the old man's face in years. It was sharp, focused, fearful. Elias knocked on the window. His father looked up, stared, and whispered something, lips barely moving. Elias strained to read them. He said,
"Get out. Get out of time."
Then his father's eyes rolled upward, and the clocks all screamed. Not ticked, but screamed. A chorus of metallic shrieks that dragged Elias back through himself, through the snow, through his blood. And he awoke on the floor, back in the present, cold, vomiting rust. The watch lay open again, but now the crack in the wall had become a hole, round, black, lined with teeth of clockwork gears, grinding endlessly, a portal into something older than time, something that fed on reversal, that drank the turning of the world. Elias crawled toward it just to see, and from within he heard Mara laughing, not joy, mocking, or maybe begging. His hand reached forward, the watch spun in his other palm, and now, every time he twisted it, something inside the hole moved closer. A shape, a thing made not of flesh, but time denied. He began to see in its reflection, in shadows, once in the face of a clock, its hands twisted to form an eye blinking. Elias knew now. He was no longer reversing events. He was feeding something. Each rewind, each memory, each ache to see her again, it was watching and it was eating. It was still hungry. Elias no longer left the workshop, not because he couldn't. The door still opened. The streets of Grey Wharf still dragged their fog across the stones, but the hole in the wall had grown and nothing outside could compete with the pull of that darkness. He barely noticed the hunger, the thirst, the pain in his knees. He had become a creature of flickering light and breathless silence. The clocks remained stopped, all except one, the black pocket watch. It ticked with no rhythm, no purpose, like a muscle twitching after death. And now the hole, once no larger than a crack, had widened into a corridor. It breathed. That was the only word Elias could place on it. The air that poured from it smelled of oil, smoke, and forgotten hours. Sometimes he saw movement, a silhouette deep inside. Slender, still, always watching. He approached. Not with boldness, but with inevitability. He held the watch tightly, fingers bloodless around its chain. The gears along the inside of the corridor turned without touch, grinding slowly like teeth in sleep. Then, a whisper, not a voice, a clockwork scraping in the pitch. Like something dragging time across the floor, he stepped through. The inside was not space, not tunnel, not hallway. It was memory, arranged like architecture. The walls were lined with clocks, yes, but none he recognized. Their faces showed moments instead of numbers. Some displayed Mara's silhouette at different points in her life, laughing, crying, sleeping beside him. Others showed Elias's father, older, screaming as he wound something too tightly. Another showed Elias himself crawling through a corridor that looked just like this one. He touched one of the clock faces, the image of Mara brushing her hair, half-shadowed by evening, and he was there, just like that, inside the moment. She stood by the mirror, humming, alive, real, close. He called her name, and this time she turned, eyes wide, and screamed. Not in fear, in recognition, as if she had seen him before. Too many times. Then she clutched her chest, fell. Time buckled, the moment snapped. The glass behind her fractured into a thousand versions of her death, and Elias fell back into the corridor, bleeding from his ears. The watch in his hand began to spin, uncontrolled, like it was laughing. From deep within the corridor, the whisper came again, louder, closer. He turned. And there, far at the end of the black tunnel, a door had appeared. Wood, old, familiar. He knew that door. It had been in his childhood home. The one his father told him never to open. The one that had never, in his memory, led anywhere. He stumbled toward it. Gears along the walls spun faster. Some began to scream. Tiny metallic streaks, like the sounds clocks would make if they could feel pain. He reached the door. The watch in his hand stopped ticking. Dead still, for the first time in days. He opened the door inside a room. Simple, lit by a single lamp. A child's bedroom, a cot, a mirror, and a boy sitting on the edge of the bed crying. The boy looked up. Saw Elias, and Elias saw himself. Not as he remembered, but exact. A mirror in flesh. The boy whispered,
"Don't wind it."
Then vanished. The room bent, the walls peeled like fruit. The clocks began spinning in reverse, pulling the air out of his lungs, and from the mirror, a long, white hand reached out. Elias screamed. Darkness. Only the ticking remained, but now it was no longer his watch that ticked. It was the corridor itself. The mirror shattered, not with a sound, but with breath. striking his shoulder on the corner of the workbench. The pain dulled, distant, as if happening to someone else. His eyes remained locked on the ornate mirror's cracked surface, now no longer reflecting, but revealing a depth, a hallway behind glass. And from that dark hallway came the figure. It stepped through, not breaking the mirror, but emerging like a hand slipping from a glove, and it did not walk. It simply became. Tall, wrapped in dark cloth that moved like smoke. No face, just a skull slick with shadow. Mouth gaping wide as if screaming forever. And from that gaping maw came the echo of thousands of ticking clocks, all off beat. Chaos. Elias tried to back away, but his legs refused. He raised the watch as if it might shield him, as if the thing might remember the shape of its own master. But it didn't recoil. It smiled, or gave the impression of smiling, and reached one skeletal hand toward the timepiece. Its fingers clicked as they moved, each joint like a second snapping into place, and Elias saw what lay behind the hollow sockets of its eyes, himself. Thousands of him, each version different, aged, mad, young, dead, each winding the watch again and again and again, and something else too. Mara, not alive, not quite. But echoing through each of those versions, sometimes weeping, sometimes burning, sometimes whispering.
Please, stop.
He screamed, not out of fear, not anymore, but out of realization. He had never been trying to save her. He had been feeding the machine. The memory, the corridor, the watch. Every attempt, every rewind, every breath spent clawing at the past, they were the fuel this thing fed on. And he'd given it decades. The figure stepped closer and the workshop shifted. The walls bent outward like lungs filling. The clocks began reversing all at once, hands spinning wildly, glass cracking, springs bursting. Elias collapsed to the floor, watch still clutched to his chest, blood seeping from his ears. Then, stillness. The figure was gone. And in its place, Mara, whole, smiling, sitting on the edge of the bed where she had died. She opened her arms.
Come,
she whispered. Her voice was wrong, but so achingly close.
You can rest now. I forgive you.
He wanted to believe it. He almost stepped forward. But the watch in his hand twitched. A single, deliberate tick. And he understood it wasn't her. It was it. It had learned his grief, perfected it, and now it wore her like a mask. Elias turned the crown of the watch hard. The room collapsed inward like a curtain torn down. He found himself at the riverbank. Snow fell, the sky grey, water rising. Mara stood in the shallows, reaching for something he couldn't see. He ran, faster than he'd run in years, screaming, begging her to stop. She turned, startled. Saw him and smiled. This time, she ran to him. They met in the mud, fell to their knees, held each other, sobbing. Time froze. The river stopped mid-ripple. The snow hung motionless in the air, and from the tree line, dozens of figures stepped into view. All Elias. Each one holding a black watch, each one weeping, each one repeating the moment over and over and over. They collapsed into each other. Time fractured. The sky bled gears. The snow turned to shards of glass. The river began flowing upward, and Mara split into three, four, 100 faces, all frozen in the same smile. He had saved her so many times, and never once had she stayed. Elias screamed and threw the watch into the sky, but it hung there spinning, waiting. And then it descended again, slow, inevitable, into his palm. Back, because it had always been his, and he had always belonged to it. He awoke in the workshop, alone. The mirror cracked, the clocks silent, and in his hand the black watch, warm, breathing. It ticked once, and all the clocks ticked with it, not in harmony, but in obedience. The workshop was no longer a place. It had become a clock in itself, a living, breathing engine of time's grief. Every wall throbbed faintly with pulses like ticks. Every mirror had cracked in patterns resembling faces, and the air was thick with dust that whispered as it moved. Elias stood beneath the chandelier of rusted pendulums, holding the black watch in both hands. Its surface was hot now, burning, but he didn't dare let it go. For days or maybe minutes, he'd been trapped in here, circling the same sequence of hours. Each time, he thought he'd broken free. Something shifted, or began shifting. A book out of place, a memory he hadn't made, blood on his sleeve from a wound he hadn't earned yet. And always the thing in the mirror watched. It mimicked Mara sometimes. Other times, it took the form of his father, muttering with clenched teeth, winding the watch with trembling fingers that bled. But today it wore his own face. Not as he was now, but younger, stronger, smiling. And that was the most terrifying thing of all. Elias backed away from the mirror. It mirrored nothing now. No reflection, just an open eye, wide and wet and ancient, watching him through time. He screamed, not in madness, but in final defiance.
What do you want?
The mirror did not answer, but the watch did. It clicked once, and in that click, the clocks on the walls began ticking backward, rapidly. The workshop blurred, the floor bent inward like a whirlpool. He clutched the watch tighter, his knuckles cracked open, bone visible beneath pale skin, and then stillness again. He was in the past. But this time, he wasn't alone. Figures lined the room, motionless, not ghosts, versions of himself. Dozens, hundreds, all of them dead-eyed, some clutching the black watch, others reaching for it, some with mouths stitched shut, one weeping blood from empty sockets. They turned to him and spoke as one.
You are the hour. You are the wound.
Elias collapsed. The watch screamed in his hand, not a sound, a pressure, like the moment before a great bell tolls. And then, a final figure entered the room. It did not walk. It moved like wind through a dying tree, tall, shadowed, robed, gliding, the faceless clock from the mirror. But now it had a voice, soft, gentle, almost loving.
You have asked the clock to stop,
it said.
But you are its heartbeat.
It reached for him. He tried to flee, but time refused to move. He was rooted in memory. The watch peeled open like a flower, revealing not years, but images. Mara's last breath, his father's last sigh, 100 versions of his own death once more, and beneath them all, the blank space where the next moment should go. The thing extended a bony finger and wrote something in it. Elias read it and wept. The mirror shattered inward. The clocks all stopped. And the workshop fell into silence. But deep beneath the floorboards, a new ticking began. Outside, Grey Wharf is quiet. The old shop is boarded shut. They say no one's lived there in years, but children sometimes say they hear ticking behind the wood. And once a constable swore he saw a flickering lantern inside and an old man standing motionless, staring at a wall of clocks that all pointed to the same impossible hour, 13. And the black watch, still waiting, still warm, still breathing, still listening for someone to ask. Can I go back? The hour had passed. Epilogue: The Inheritance of Dust. Years passed, or perhaps they didn't. No one in Grey Wharf quite remembered when the workshop had vanished. Not burned, not demolished, just gone. A patch of street where fog never lifted and footsteps felt heavier. They say the ground hums there at night, and sometimes if you're alone, truly alone, you'll hear a sound not quite wind, not quite voice. Something soft, something ticking. Scholars of the occult speak of an object lost to time. A watch, black, heavy, nameless. No hands, no key, only a crown that turns on its own. They call it Barrow's Wound, a machine of grief, a device built from sorrow and repetition. And they say it finds the lonely, those who whisper to the dark. I would do anything to have them back. One man in a town far north claimed it appeared on his pillow after his son died. Another swore it showed up in his coat pocket after burying his wife. None of them could remember when they first turned it, only that once they had, they were never themselves again. In hidden texts and cursed volumes, there are diagrams of a clock that doesn't measure time. It feeds on it. Time gone, time past, time lived, memories of events that could have happened. That opens doors not to the past, but to echoes, to copies, to loops that tighten like nooses. And at the center of the mechanism, always, a man named Elias. Winding, watching, weeping. The watchmaker who wouldn't let go. If you find it, and one day you might, you'll know it by its warmth. It will feel like it remembers you. And when you open it, it won't tick. Not until you whisper their name. And then, only then, will the clock begin again. Tick, tick, tick. The tale is told. The mechanism reset. Well, I hope you enjoyed today's tale. Grief is a ghost we carry in our chest. It doesn't scream, it doesn't wail. It just waits, ticking softly behind the ribs. Until one day we tried to answer it. Elias Vero tried, and he paid. Because some doors are meant to stay closed, some clocks are never meant to be wound, and some love is a kind of haunting. If you felt this story settled somewhere deep, if the air felt a little heavier when it ended, then consider leaving a review on iTunes. It helps the show more than you know, and lets the algorithm's spirits know you're out there, listening in the dark. And if you'd like to help me keep the oil lamps lit and the clocks from winding themselves, head on over to my Patreon and join our little coven of faithful listeners. You'll get early access, options to vote on your next story, extremely high quality bitrate so you can hear my voice at 320 kilobits per second, and possibly even cursed objects in the mail. That last part may or may not be legally binding. Now, let me take a moment to thank this episode's most loyal patrons. Those who keep the wheels turning, the echoes echoing, and the time loop ever hungry. First up, I want to thank my Ode Night Tea Titan, Matto Star, a super, super legend, a literal deity unto himself. Matto is the beloved stillness in the storm. In a world where time turned cruel and memory becomes a labyrinth of grief, you were the one waiting at the edge, not with the answers, not with an escape, but with tea, with warmth, with that quiet, steady light that tells the lost they are seen. While Elias slipped through shadows and reflections cracked with sorrow, you were the anchor just outside the frame, the hand that steadied the cup, even as the hours unspooled. You are the breath between sobs, the silence that comforts, not consumes. The reason someone like Elias might, for a moment, believe there is still a way home. Thank you, Matto, for being the lantern that never judges where you've been, only lights the path where you might still go. Matto, have an amazing, brilliant, jaw-dropping week. The kind of jaw-dropping experience that you bring to me every month with your support and your kindness. It is always wonderful to chat to you, and expect some comms from me this week coming, you absolute legend. Thank you immensely for your support. You are a great friend. Now to my white tea warlords. First up, Lesosaurus Rex. While Elias wept over clocks and ghosts, Lesosaurus Rex had already challenged the skeletal time entity to a deadlift showdown beneath the broken mirror. Guess who PR'd at 315 and made the Banshee cry in reverse? Yes. Leza did not fear the corridor of time. Leza power cleaned it. Told the cursed pocket watch to stop being such a dramatic antique and used it as a paperweight for their protein log. Thank you, Lesosaurus Rex. You didn't just survive the curse, you made it sweat. Have a kick-ass gym session, legend, and thank you for your amazing support. Enjoy a wonderful week ahead of yourself, my friend. And Maya, my next white tea warlord. Well, Maya didn't flinch when the mirror cracked or when Mara's time-warping echo tried to scream. She just raised an eyebrow, muttered, "You're adorable when you're cursed," and coaxed the thing into a nap. Now the ancient reality fracturing time creature curls up on her keyboard at 3 a.m, purring like a haunted radiator. She calls it Tickles. Thank you, Maya. Your spectral sass tames the unnameable. And your cats, well, they run this timeline now. Maya, thank you so much for your support. Have an absolutely, positively perfect week ahead. And thanks for being my pal. And my next white tea warlord, Sangeetha Cigar. Sangeetha was already sipping tea in the corridor before the story started, writing the ending in chalk on the walls of time while the clocks looked on in quiet dread. She whispered the twist to the moon. She left death a note saying, "Try again next week, I'm busy unraveling patterns in the dust." Even the cursed watch turned itself around in her presence, asking shyly, "Do you already know me?" Thank you, Sangeetha, for seeing the wheel turn before it turns, for naming the ghost before it knows it's dead. Thank you so much for your support, for being my pal, and I hope you have a positively brilliant week ahead. But I guess you probably know that. I do want to also thank my old grey enforcers, of which I am lucky to have. Chad Warren, Divided by Zero, Juicebox Andy, Just Heather, Paige Kramer, Peter Raffaelli, Rhonda Ray, Seductive Smiles, Jane Gumnick, and Michael Crump. Thank you, my old grey enforcers and chamomile supporters, for your amazing kindness and keeping the lights on and pumping. Now, my amazing listeners, sleep lightly. The hours are not as still as they seem. Wind nothing you do not understand. And if the ticking ever starts where there should be silence, do not follow it. The clock remembers. They always do. Have a wonderful week, legends, and I'll see you next week for more horror tales. Bye for now, and not forever.
That the past could be held. Let the dead never leave, but the clocks they remember what you asked them to hide. And each turn of the crown is a sliver of time. You can't take it back, but it still takes from you till your face is the one ticking too. He saw her in mirrors, in moments undone. She'd laugh like she lived, then decay into none. He turned back again, more hollow, more wrong, while the walls learned to whisper his name in their song.
You are the hour, you are the wound, you are the one who begged the moon to pause the time. Stop the flood, but clocks don't love, they only code, and the clocks they remember what your heart tries to bend. There's no door through the past, only hallways that end. He tried to rewind, but sleep lightly, my friend, and win nothing at all. If a shadow steps out from the clock on the wall, don't speak her name, don't look too long. Some love goes on ticking.
Yeah.